T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally, where author T.C. Hill helps you understand how the human body works and how to work your body. To submit a question for an upcoming show, go to kickitnaturally.com. Now here's your host, T.C. Hill.
Hey, welcome back to Kick It Naturally for episode 236. This is T.C. Hill, and you're going to be listening to the Tachycardia Part 2. Last week was Part 1, so it's good times. I'm podcasting all over the place. I'm having a good time doing more new shows for Kick It Naturally. We've been doing our six-figure health pro podcast. It's kind of a marketing podcast and business podcast for health professionals. That's been a lot of fun. But I also have another episode I'm working on for Kick It Naturally. It's about H. pylori. A lot of you guys have been asking me to do a show about H. pylori and what the heck is going on with this. So I'm starting to work on that, and that should be out in a few weeks. So if you guys have other topics that you want to cover, go to kickitnaturally.com and hit me up. Let me know. What should I be talking about? Because I'm podcasting all over the place. A lot of interviews on other shows. It's been a good time. So today, we're going to kind of dig a little further into tachycardia, and we're going to talk about more other possible causes that can be creating this issue. We're going to go over some actual real-life cases, and then I'm going to answer some questions from you guys about tachycardia. So last week was week one, and we kind of talked a little bit about how tachycardia is actually a more serious issue, and it's usually when the resting heart rate is over 100 beats per minute. So that can be a big deal that you want to get checked out. But we also talked about how most people call just an elevated heart rate tachycardia, because it can still create a lot of symptoms even when it's not at that super high level of over 100 beats per minute. And even a doctor will call it, or even diagnose a person with tachycardia even when it's not over 100. So we talked mostly about elevated heart rate in this two-part series, because that's not such a serious issue, and it's something that a lot of people deal with and can create a lot of symptoms. So if you're experiencing resting heart rate over 100, you should get that checked out right away. It could be a serious issue. And then after you get it checked out, you can still work on a lot of these natural things that we're talking about in these two episodes to actually fix any underlying cause or figure out what the underlying cause is for you. So last week we talked mostly about the anabolic imbalance and how that seems to be the most common underlying cause. And so if you haven't heard part one for tachycardia, you're doing it wrong. You got to do it right. So go back and listen to part one. You can find it on iTunes or Stitcher, or just go to kickitnaturally.com/235, and you can listen to part one there too. And if you didn't download the cheat sheet for these two episodes, you can get that at kickitnaturally.com/235 as well. And on this cheat sheet, I just kind of listed all the things that we talked about. We talked about how to, you know, look at your own physiology, how to run simple tests at home to see if you might be leaning too anabolic. So get that cheat sheet to kind of walk you through it. And for those who I just completely lose and they're done and they finish the episode and they're like, I think he said something about sponge cake. I don't know what the rest was. If you really lost, then go to kickitnaturally.com and sign up for our almost free 4-week digestion course. It's only 50 cents. We just charge 50 cents to keep out all the spam registrations. But that course has a lot of videos that kind of walk you through, look, here's how you do this test. See how easy it is? That was easy. You didn't even break anything. And then here's how you look at the results from that test. See how you just put it on this piece of paper and it all makes sense? So those videos seem to help a lot of people that get a little stuck. So if you get stuck, don't let it freak you out. Just get some help and kind of walk through that. And in that course, you'll also find the link to our free private Facebook support group where you can ask questions if you get stuck on anything. So after part one, you should be an anabolic imbalance expert now. But we're going to talk about some other possible causes that can create this, even if you're not dealing with an anabolic imbalance, or maybe you are dealing with a little bit of an anabolic imbalance, and some of these other issues we're talking about today could be contributing to the issue as well. The body is not always so cut and dry. It's not always going to be just one thing. Multiple causes can be going on at once, and maybe even sometimes one cause is creating the symptom, and at other times a totally different cause can be creating it. So we're going to kind of talk about some different things that we'll look at. But, are you listening to me when I say this? But, just because I go over a solution that can be used for some of these underlying causes that I'm going to talk about today, that doesn't mean that you should just go use that solution or supplement or whatever it is that I'm saying can help just because you're dealing with the symptom. Don't do that. If you do that, you didn't listen to anything I said, and I'm very upset with you right now. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to calm down a little bit. It's no big deal. So just remember, don't treat yourself off of symptoms only, because every symptom can be caused by a variety of underlying causes. So when I'm talking about these other causes, you want to look at your numbers and look at what's going on to see if that's a possible cause for you, and then taking steps to improve that issue with maybe some of the things that I talk about here could be right for you. Just be sure to look at your numbers and don't just go off of the symptom. So another possible issue that can be creating an elevated heart rate or even severe tachycardia issues are viral, bacterial, or inflammatory issues. So what happens when any of these things are going on is that it kind of brings on a sense of emergency or stress in the body, and the heart will beat more rapidly, consistently. It kind of seems like the body is requiring more circulation to try to keep things coordinated and balanced, and it's kind of beating a little faster to maybe circulate a little faster and get nutrients flowing more and trying to help the body function correctly. So this slight state of emergency can kind of send the body into a stress that says, hey, let's pick it up. We got to do some things to help what's going on. And in those particular situations, it seems that CoQ10 can be helpful as a short-term solution, but you also kind of want to look at what may be the underlying cause of those issues for you. If it is a bacterial issue or a viral or even a fungal issue, you may need to take care of those things so that those problems aren't continuing. Same with an inflammatory problem. Remember that inflammation is never the actual cause of pain or problems that are going on. It's usually just a response. It's like your immune system trying to fix or repair a problem. So when you're looking at inflammation issues, you got to look at what's causing that inflammation. Don't view inflammation as the actual problem. So while we're on the topic of viral, bacterial, inflammatory issues and creating the stress and all that kind of stuff and the body stepping up the heart rate just to deal with that stress, remember that low resources can be a stress to the body or create like this same kind of state of emergency. Think of it like trying to pay $800 worth of bills with 12 bucks. I'm freaking out. How am I going to pay this bill? They're going to shut off my cable, and how am I going to watch Desperate Housewives or whatever it is I'm watching? So it's a stress. So the body does the same kind of thing. So if you're a person that you look at your blood pressure and it's like 90 over 70 or something like that, it's really low, and there's clues that you don't have a lot of mineral resources and you're likely not breaking down your food correctly and pulling all the nutrients out of that food, then that can be a big stress to the body to try to get everything to function correctly without the resources needed to make those things function. So you got to look at the resources that you have available to you. Look at your numbers when you're doing that. And if it looks like your resources are low, you really got to take steps to, number one, improve digestion. But maybe you need to focus on more nutrient-rich foods as you improve that digestion too. Maybe things like bone broth, where it's a lot easier to pull all those nutrients out of the bones and the other things that cook in that bone broth. Since you don't have to break it all down, it's all ready to go. It's easy to get in there. So you might need to look at more nutrient-rich food, maybe like liver and things like that, as you improve digestion. Just don't try to eat like liver if you're not able to break down proteins. You got to fix the digestion first. So that can be a really big one. Is there something going on in the body that is creating a state of emergency or a state of stress that I can improve, and that could improve the elevated heart rate issue? Another big possible underlying cause is sugar handling problems. And a sugar handling problem could mean that you can't process sugars well because the cells have become resistant to the insulin and you've become insulin resistant. So The sugar is in the bloodstream, but the cells can't really access it, and so it accumulates, and insulin goes very high and can create inflammation, because the most common cause of high inflammation is high insulin levels in our country today. That's just kind of how it is with the way we eat, and the junk and the chemicals that are in the food and causing problems, is that a lot of us become insulin resistant, and then when we eat sugars and carbs, it creates a lot of trouble. But a sugar handling problem can also mean that maybe you're processing sugars too aggressively, and your insulin is kind of like a big bully. And when you eat any kind of carbs or sugars, you create this big sugar spike and then a huge crash where sugar goes very low. And when that sugar goes very low, for some people, that can be viewed as a big emergency to the body. Because basically, we have buffering systems in place. The body has backups in mind. And when sugars go really low, the body can buffer that as long as there's enough mineral in the system to buffer those low sugars and allow everything to function correctly. But like we just talked about a minute ago, a lot of people don't have enough mineral in the system. Their blood pressure is dirt low, and they don't have that buffer there. So when sugars crash, they're in a world of hurt, and maybe they become unreasonable and they yell at the mailman because they don't like the shorts the mailman is wearing that day. So I know that you know those people, if you're not one of those people, where when blood sugars crash, the whole world is a 10 fire alarm. And you got to understand that the body is viewing it the same way. The body views that as an emergency too, and that can create that elevated heart rate. It can kind of push the person into a fight or flight state, where that's kind of that stress state. And we're going to talk about the autonomic nervous system and an overly sympathetic state or fight or flight state in just a few minutes. But this sugar handling issue can be a big problem for a lot of people. And another thing to consider is that eating a lot of carbs and sugars can push a person more anabolic, which goes right back to the main underlying cause that we talked about in part one, which is most common when you see any type of elevated heart rate issue. So taking steps to reduce carbs and sugars, or maybe change over to carbs and sugars that can provide you with carbs that you might need, but not create such a big spike and crash. Like, you know, a potato or pizza or bread or something, it's going to create a huge spike and crash. But maybe like a sweet potato or a yam or some butternut squash or some berries can provide you enough carbs. But without that huge spike and crash, it's all about trying to keep your blood sugar on a more even keel so that you're not creating those spikes and crashes. So you need to take some type of steps to reduce carbs. And for most people, that means they need to fix digestion first so that they can pull nutrition out of proteins and fats. Otherwise, when they reduce carbs, they're going to go nuts. And maybe they'll make it through the day, but by 9 p.m., they're going to be eating, Nilla wafers and putting them in a taco shell or something like that. It's not going to go well. So you really got to help your body get the nutrients that it needs so that you don't need so many carbs and sugars. So we do have episodes on cravings and things like that. You can search for that at Kick It Naturally, and kind of talks a little bit more about how to take those steps to reduce that need for carbs so that you're able and you qualify to reduce the amount of carbs that you're eating.
If you're a health professional or you want to start a career as a health professional, be sure to catch Tony's new marketing podcast for health professionals. Search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. For all of our Kick It Naturally listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so you can check out their service. Mm-hmm. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link.
The next thing we need to consider with an elevated heart rate is, are there oxygen delivery issues? And when we talk about this, we need to talk a little bit about the pH of the blood. And there's a lot of people out there that promote, you know, that we need to alkalize and we're all going to die if we don't alkalize. And if you want to learn more about the truth with this issue, you can listen to our, go to kickitnaturally.com and search for The Truth About pH Balance. And we have a two-part episode that really digs into that a lot. But the reality is that a bloodstream that's leaning too acidic can cause a lot of problems. But the truth is, so can a bloodstream that is leaning too alkaline. That can cause just as many problems. So what happens is something, when we're looking at oxygen, is something that we all learned about in science class can affect oxygen distribution, and that's called the Bohr effect. And what that means is that when the bloodstream leans too alkaline, the oxygen can't leave the bloodstream and go down to the tissues, into the cells where it needs to be. So it can create a lot of problems with oxygen utilization. And basically that oxygen is in the bloodstream. So your doctor will take what's called a pulse oximeter, and he'll check your oxygen levels, and they'll say, oh, it's great, you have plenty of oxygen. But the problem is when the bloodstream is leaning too alkaline, that oxygen can't get down to the tissues where it needs to be. So what we kind of assume is that with those issues where the bloodstream is leaning too alkaline, the heart could be pumping more blood to try and increase oxygen distribution. The cells and the tissues are saying, hey, we don't have the oxygen we need, and the body can't really tell that the bloodstream is leaning too alkaline, and that's why it can't get down there. So it just pumps more blood to try and distribute more oxygen more efficiently. So that can raise the heart rate. And of course, you hear from a lot of people who say, my heart really races after I eat. Like after every meal, I just get all jacked up and my heart is really elevated. And that makes sense in this scenario, because when we eat food, the body needs to make hydrochloric acid to start breaking down those proteins in the stomach. And to make hydrochloric acid, the body needs chloride. So it'll pull all the chloride out of the blood so that it can make hydrochloric acid. And especially if a person has low mineral resources, then that chloride in the blood can go very low, and the blood can tend far too alkaline. So just keep in mind that the digestive process takes more resources than just about anything that we do. So this makes a lot of sense. If someone is already leaning a little bit too alkaline on their bloodstream, then they eat and they pull all of the acidic chloride out of the bloodstream to make HCl, and now the blood is even more alkaline, then the heart rate could really jack up by just trying to pump more blood to distribute oxygen more efficiently. And the final possible underlying cause that we're going to cover on this show is possible autonomic nervous system imbalances. And the autonomic nervous system is basically a system that kind of handles a lot of the body's functions without us having to think about it. So there's two sides to that system. There's the parasympathetic side, which means the rest and digest side. And this is kind of where the body puts a lot of its resources towards digestion, resting and repairing, rebuilding tissues, things like that. And then there is the sympathetic or fight or flight side of the autonomic nervous system. And that's kind of changes how the body's functioning a little bit to maximize the ability of the body to deal with the stress. You know, it helps us to run away from a tiger or fight off a lion, that kind of thing. That doesn't happen a lot to you today, probably, but, you know, traffic and the bills are late and why won't that kid quit screaming at me? You know, all those things can be a stress and can push us into that fight or flight state. So we're going to get a little complicated here, so just hold on for just a second, and I'll go back to saying normal words here in just a few minutes. But when we look at this, in a parasympathetic state, the vascular system where the blood flows through can be a little more dilated or open up. And so it's not really giving any resistance to the blood flowing through there, and it can flow a little faster. So when we look at blood pressure, if the blood pressure is low, then and the heart and the pulse is very high, then it's often they're leaning a little more toward the parasympathetic side, and the vascular system is a little more open, and that may be part of the reason why it's pumping harder. Now, on the other side of the coin, when a person's leaning too sympathetic, then that vascular system will be constricted, so the blood pressure is higher. So if we see a higher blood pressure and a higher pulse, then often that person is leaning towards the sympathetic side, and we can take steps to improve those imbalances in either direction. So when we look at how to figure out is a person leaning too sympathetic or too parasympathetic, I put like a formula for you on the cheat sheet at kickitnaturally.com/235 or /236. You can download that free cheat sheet on either of the show notes pages for these two episodes. So it'll kind of show you how the formula does, and you can kind of look at your blood pressure and get an idea if you're leaning too far in one direction. But I will say that for those of you who are on the Coalition website, which is at ourcoalition.org, it's a private members-only organization that practitioners that we train use to teach their clients about nutrition. But our book readers are allowed to sign up for, as well, to do their own self-monitoring of their chemistry. And there's progress charts on that site where you just input your blood pressure. And then when you input that number, the site automatically creates a fourth number. So you input your systolic blood pressure, which is the top number, and your diastolic blood pressure, and then your pulse. And then it creates this fourth number, which is called your pulse pressure. And this fourth number shows up on the chart automatically for you, so you don't have to do any math or worry about what the formula is. And you can just kind of watch that fourth number in your progress charts to see, am I leaning too sympathetic or too parasympathetic? And all you have to look at is if that number is greater than 46, then that's a possible marker for maybe you're leaning too sympathetic. And if that number is less than 37, then it's possible that you're leaning too parasympathetic. So if you're on the Coalition, you can use those charts. If not, look at the cheat sheet and I'll show you the formula to kind of figure out that number so that you can track it. And I won't get into this show, but we do have podcast episodes on autonomic nervous system imbalances that you can listen to, and we kind of talk about steps that you can take to improve those issues. And also in the appendix of all of my books, I go into the autonomic nervous system issues in a little more depth and talk about ways to improve them as well. So you can see that there's a wide variety of underlying causes that could create an elevated resting heart rate. So, and this is all beyond, you know, a person having a legitimate malfunction or deformity or some type of birth defect or something that is creating the problem. So you have serious cases like that, and then some of these underlying causes can create serious cases as well. But for most people, the symptoms are a lot more concerning than they are debilitating. You know, the heart is kind of important for us to go through our day. We kind of need our heart to function correctly. So when it starts doing something abnormal, a person can kind of freak out a little bit, and that's understandable. So the stress alone could magnify a lot of things because the person doesn't understand that it's just an imbalance that's creating this symptom or magnifying the symptom, and so they just think that something is horribly, horribly wrong. So, but in a lot of cases, the actual symptom the person is dealing with is not so bad for them to deal with, and the steps that they need to take to fix a lot of these underlying causes that we just talked about are not real difficult, and in many cases can see improvements pretty quickly. Now, what can be concerning is that the treatments that the medical world uses for a lot of these things can cause a lot of problems. And I think that what we see is you can see that from the causes that we just talked about, that the solutions for each of those causes would be drastically different. So they may see that a step that a person could take could improve this symptom. Like, let's say, like magnesium may have helped one person, but when another person tries that and they see no improvement, then they feel like, okay, it must be a structural thing. I need to have this repaired or fixed or something like that. Or it causes a doctor to say, okay, we need to start digging in to see what else is going wrong since the solution that worked for another person didn't work for you. So it's important to at least understand how to look at these possible underlying causes to see if there's a glaring issue for you that could at least use some attention, at least try fixing that before some severe measures were taken. Perfect example is a case that I experienced. Now, this wasn't my client, but it was the wife of a client of mine. And the wife had been to a number of specialists, had tried some medications, and nothing was working, and the situation was getting worse. And she was actually scheduled for a surgical heart procedure before my client asked me about this. And so I was just kind of talking to him about it a little bit and explaining some of these common underlying causes that we talked about, and was asking about other issues that may be going on, and I explained the anabolic issue and how that's the most common cause for a heart rate, a resting heart rate, to be elevated. And so we started talking, and she had been more constipated than normal lately, which is a very common symptom that comes up with an anabolic imbalance. Again, it's not the only cause of constipation, but an anabolic imbalance is very common when there's constipation. And so he checked her pHs just to kind of see if there was information that would be helpful. And her urine pH was very high. It was up in the like 7 area, and it was higher than her saliva pH. And we always want to see urine pH lower than saliva pH. When we see it higher than saliva pH, we call that an inversion. And we see that that inversion can create just about any crazy symptom that a person could be experiencing. And when that inversion is fixed, a lot of times these crazy symptoms that they can't figure out what's going on will often improve greatly. So I kind of explained those things to him, and I explained that magnesium is one of the most powerful pro-catabolic, which is anti-anabolic, minerals that there are. So I also said, you know, if she just used some cheap ascorbic acid that you can pick up at any health food store, that that may help lower her urine pH and would at the very least help maybe show some improvement to the constipation, since that ascorbic acid can not only lower the urine pH, it can help acidify the stool and help it move a little bit easier. So it was another week or so before her surgery was going to take place. She didn't feel like this was going to help anything, but she certainly wanted some relief from the severe constipation, so she was willing to try those things. And she took magnesium at breakfast and at lunch. You want to take pro-catabolic things earlier in the day when we're intended to be more catabolic. So she took those with breakfast and at lunch. And she took some ascorbic acid before breakfast and before lunch. And her stool started to loosen up, so she got excited and kept doing it. And it was about 3.5 days before her resting pulse just started to come down. And she wasn't having the episodes of arrhythmia and the racing heart rate like she was. And so she just continued. And after a week, it was back to the normal. And she called the doctor and explained and went back in. And he checked her. And he's like, yeah, if you want to put this off, it looks like things are calming down. It ended up that she never needed the procedures. So it's important to understand that not every case is going to be like this. And this, you know, magnesium and cheap form of vitamin C is not going to fix this problem for everybody. But when you realize that an anabolic imbalance can create a situation that can appear like an emergency like this, that if you just improve that imbalance, that sure, why wouldn't that improve the symptoms that that imbalance happened to be causing for that person? Does that make sense? So if the issue had been caused by some type of autonomic nervous system issue, or even an oxygen delivery issue for her, or if she had some type of defect that was creating the problem, obviously some magnesium and ascorbic acid wouldn't have done anything to improve the issue, but she was already scheduled for the surgery. What's the harm in just trying some things that are natural? And, you know, vitamin C is pretty gentle, and so is magnesium if you're not already way too catabolic. So she took the steps and it happened to work out for her. It can also be really beneficial to look at these body chemistry issues in yourself to better understand what could happen when you're using medications that your doctor's suggesting. And please understand, in no way am I ever saying, you know, not to take the medication that might be helping you. That's something you have to figure out with you and your doctor. But I do think it can be very beneficial to understand the effects of some of these medications could have. Because in a lot of cases, with a racing heart rate, they will give a person blood pressure lowering medications, blood pressure lowering. And they feel that that's also going to lower the heart rate. And in many cases, it does not. In many cases, these can be from those things can be going high for different reasons. Blood pressure can be going high for a very different reason than a pulse could be going high. So taking drugs that are meant to lower blood pressure are not always going to bring down the heart rate. And a lot of times these people that are dealing with an anabolic imbalance are often doing so because they're eating too many carbs, and they're eating too many carbs because they don't have enough mineral in the system. So their blood pressure is already low. So when you put them on a blood pressure lowering medication, that person just turns into a zombie, and they can hardly even function. And in the next episode, we're going to have to take this to three episodes because I've been blabbing on forever and I've gone too long, and I still have a kajillion questions from you guys that I have to go over. So in the next episode, I'll also share another case study of a friend that had some issues with this, and they were using some medications for her that ended up just making it where she couldn't even work. So we'll talk a little bit about that in the next episode as well. But go ahead and start looking at your numbers, doing your self-test. Don't forget to download that cheat sheet if any of this was too complicated for you, because I kind of walk through, okay, look at these tests, look at these tests. This is what it can indicate. And you can get that free cheat sheet at kickitnaturally.com/235, and you can download it there. So do that, do some homework, and then next week we will talk a little bit more about case studies, and I'll get into all your questions so that we can look at how this information plays into some real-life scenarios, okay? We'll see you next week.
That's it for our show. Don't cry. If you want to read Tony's book for free, go to kickitnaturally.com/book. If you want us to cover a question on an upcoming show, go to kickitnaturally.com and click on Ask Tony. I know there's got to be a joke there. We'll see you next time on Kick It Naturally.
Wickety wackety wickety wackety. Sloop, sloop, sloop.